To see examples of what we talked about on this episode, along with further information, go to bunchofdorks.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to
Two Dimension Podcast,
the comic book podcast
with no direction.
Whoever that is.
All right. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Two Dimension Comics, the podcast with no direction. This is episode number 185. I am your host, Dallas, and today with me we have...
Al.
Don.
I like how Don's pointing at Al like, you go.
Yeah, thanks for dropping the
curtain. You know, we keep total transparency here, and it's something that I always pride the show on, and I know Don probably hates when I do this, is kind of pulling away the curtain, like when we're eating like snacks or cookies, and I got to point it out to everybody. Like, for instance, right now I'm about to get up and go make myself a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, how's it going? I haven't been on the episode in... for a little while, or on the show for a little while. It's been a few episodes, so it's kind of nice to be back.
Yeah, it's been nice without you, because Al and I could talk for hours and hours, and nobody's reminding us the time or pointing at their wrist like they're pointing at a watch.
It's just what I do. Yeah, but then I sit there when I'm like helping putting the episode together in post. I'm like, man, how long is this one? Come on, guys, reel it in.
we're trying to get overtime on.
Yeah, and then we
overtime. Yeah. Trying to do the OT.
You guys get paid?
Yeah.
Oh, and damn.
Then, well, you know, we read a book, because one of the reasons we started the podcast is podcasting for fun and profit.
Hey, that's for us!
Hey, money! Yeah. So we've got my daughter just turned 9 months old, and her name's Emily. She's here with us today. She's sitting in my arms right now. You guys haven't seen her in a month or two,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, she gets bigger every time I see her.
Yeah, last time we saw was at the
Yancey
shop.
Street.
Yeah.
That's
we did
right.
The road show, the last road show.
That's right. Her hair's getting long. It's like blondish strawberry. She just started crawling the other day. So
yeah, for she's going to be talking.
I know. Next up, she's going to be reading Watchmen. So
yeah.
We'll see how that goes.
Let's start on something else first.
All right. So, I don't know.
All right.
I'm just happy to be here.
We got stuff to talk about here. I'm telling you, first thing I'm going to bring up.
Look at this. We're like not even 2 minutes into the show, and Don whips out a hardcover of a Mobius book.
From Dark Horse, this is Mobius World of Edina.
I saw that.
God, that is pretty.
Yeah.
Well, you got to post. You got to post a picture of that up on the site. That looks beautiful.
The funny story on this. This is the world of Edina. The first time I ever read anything about this, well, actually, the first time I saw anything about this was the two characters, Stell and Aiden. And it was in 85, a comic store I went to in San Diego, were selling Little Prince, because Mobius came by the store, and it was the two of them, and it was two bald people with skull caps. Really simple. I was wanting to see more of John DeFool from the Inkle, or you know, any of his short stories he did. They were fantastic. Arzak and all that. And I thought, what are these? These are lame characters. Well, then in 87, Epic Comics started putting out the Mobius graphic novels, which I was happy about. And the first one was Upon a Star. And it starts out with like a four-page story of Stellan Aiden, and he was a mechanic, some type of, can't remember what they call it, pro-solar mechanic or something like that. But then the second story was Upon a Star, and it was a weird story because it started out, there's a car company in France called Citroën. I never heard of them, but I guess they're really high-end cars. And a guy that worked for the company was wanting Mobius to do a little book as a collectible. And so Mobius was going to write like a 4 to 8 page story, and then he's going to get other people to draw it. And then he's trying to figure out what to do, and he came up with an idea, and he started thumbnailing the thing, and he thumbnailed the entire graphic novel in a couple of days.
Mm.
And then the other artist saw it, says, this is a lot of work. And then Mobius realized he wanted to draw it himself. So he contacted the salesman, you know, the guy from the car company, and he said, that's fine. He was kind of excited. What we'll do is we'll turn it into a limited book for the top salesman of the company. So it was really exclusive. And Mobius thing, I think the guy was one of his audience, and he just wanted an exclusive thing that nobody else could get. Well, later on, Epic published it, and I guess other people started publishing it. And it basically told of these two spacefarers. One of them was a mechanic.
Maggie and Hopi.
But the story took a turn I wasn't expecting. They get to this asteroid that a mining colony was on, and it was empty. And while they're on the asteroid, all of a sudden the power breaks out. It breaks into the orbit of the planet, and then it crash lands on the planet. You know, Stell pilots the whole thing down. So they get into the French car, the Citroen, and they drive down this barren, flat world. And they finally start seeing a light. And one thing they start talking about was eating. It had a bunch of processed food. And while they're talking about that, and about they may have to find more food, and they're basically talking about modern life compared to ancient life. They finally found a group of people that have all stranded there. One of them, Stell knows, from he was on the asteroid planet, asteroid mining camp. Well, there's a star which turns into a blue pyramid. They ended up, when Stell shows up, everything starts changing. The pyramid's been waiting for him. Everybody gets in the pyramid and takes off. And that's the end of the story. Okay? Well, it was a moment.
Then why is the book so dang big?
Well, that was the first story in it. Upon a Star.
You just pulled out some of the epic releases that you were just talking about. This is my first like full experience to Mobius were these books. You let me borrow them a long time ago.
Yeah, I remember them.
Now, that was Mobius 1. Then Mobius 5 is the Garden of Idina. And it tells what happened after that. Basically, Stell and Aiden wake up on the pyramid. Everybody's gone again. And this one, I couldn't stop thinking about. A friend of mine saw Stell and Aiden I worked with, and her comment, she's laughing about it. She saw something I never thought of. As I told you, when I first saw them, I saw a couple of simple characters. They weren't much. But she kept bringing up it was Slashy, because one of the characters, even though they were both men, one looked more feminine than the other one. And she was, you know, I don't know what she was thinking, but she was bringing up that it basically is like one of the male characters was more female. Even though I saw what they were saying, I didn't take it that way, you know. But I said, I think you're missing it. So I lent her these books and read all. It's completely different what she was thinking about. Turns out, they have to start eating the food on the planet. There's apple trees and everything else. And they're saying they can't process the food. You know, they're not set up like the ancients were. And I said, I don't know how the ancients could ever do it. And Stell's arguing with Aiden about it, saying, I don't know, he said, how many, basically what they're talking about, Aiden was 23 years old, and she had 26 hearts. They replaced her heart 26 times and liver, you know, but basically all your organs were always being replaced. And they're talking about the processed food they ate was the only way they could, you know, eat the stuff. Well, finally, they're starving, they're dying, and so Stell eats an apple. And he eats a rotten apple that's on the ground, and he immediately retches it up. And when the situation gets desperate, he starts thinking about it, says, well, maybe not all the apples are bad. He says, maybe it's just the one I had is bad. Maybe I should look at the texture and the color and everything else. So he picks up another apple and eats it. This is really good. So he gives them to her. She starts eating, or Aiden. I keep saying her. But she says, I don't know how long we're going to be able to last on this kind of food. Well, suddenly, I mean, it's over time, their bodies start changing. Aiden is a woman, and Stell is a man. And they start looking like a man and a woman. Their hair grows back. They start changing.
Yeah, I remember that being a shock when I was reading that story for the first time.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that. Basically, what Mobius was talking about was the world we live in. He's writing about what he was going through because he was changing his eating habits and everything else. And that one blew my mind. And again, they get to a certain point and they get separated. Basically, Stell starts getting urges and he goes after her. She gets upset, knocks him out, and then she runs off. And they're trying to find each other, but slowly it starts showing, like, Stell's eating fish. You know, she's starting to... But this is where it gets kind of bizarre. In the epic books, Mobius 7, the goddess, was always listed. And I couldn't find it anywhere. I talked to my buddy Britt, who was in California, and he said he couldn't find it either. Well, when my wife was pregnant, we went up to visit, and he bought it at a store in California. It was the only one he ever saw. So I physically held in my hand to look through it, and I thought, man, why can't you find this? I found it one day. I worked out in the morning. My wife was at the point where she was due any minute, so she came with me to class. After that, I took her to a few errands she needed to run, and I stopped at this one comic store, and they had this sucker bagged and boarded and $3 above the cover price, which back then you never charged any extra money for the novels, the graphic novels.
Is that the Wizard of Oz store?
Yeah. And this place, like I said, I saw it. It's the only time I've ever seen this except for a Bridge copy.
I've
so
never
I,
seen it.
I've bit,
seen those two.
I bit the bullet and bought it. So I worked evenings. I took my wife home. I went to work, got off work, came home. And I was getting ready to go to bed. And I was so excited, I stayed up and finished that for an hour. And then 2 hours later, my wife wakes me up, her water broke.
Oh, my God.
And
it's funny that your memory of finally reading that for the first time is the same memory of your daughter being born.
Yeah, and then she went through 16 hours of labor. By the time my daughter was born, I went home. I'd been up 2 days with 2 hours sleep. Fun times.
Jeez.
But it gets even more rare. The Mobius graphic novel series was supposed to go up to 8, and it was Mississippi River. Well, then, in the Marvel comics, they started advertising Mobius 9, Stell. And you could not find this anywhere. And finally, again, Britt found it somewhere in California, sent it to me. Well, what's bizarre, I have no idea why, they made it bigger than the other novel.
Oh, it is. It's a different size. That sucks.
That's weird.
Yeah.
But I've never seen this in any store. Britt saw it. He bought one and eventually saw another one, sent me an email. This is when email came out, and he said, Stell, I finally found it. And it tells the further story. The goddess tells the story of Aten, and it tells what happened after her and Stell were separated, which is pretty incredible. They're in this world they call the Nest, and then the people are completely covered, and they're getting something called nose fever. They're wearing masks, and they have nose filters, and they eat their food processed. And it's more of the same of what Stell and Aten were going through before they landed on the planet. And then it finishes. Well, Stell tells his story, and there's these giant monster creatures chasing him down, which never happened before. It's related to what happened to Aten. And then he has another story. And I was like, okay. Well, this one came out in 97. It was 10 years later when I finally read it from the first story. After this, Mobius went back to France, and we never got any more new Mobius stories in English.
Mm.
So,
do you have all 9 volumes?
Those are translated, though.
Yeah. And, you know, some of these stories were in heavy metal, the Epic ran. And I have to say, the Epic, I never complained about the translations. When heavy metal got them, I was always happy. But the translations are actually sometimes quite a bit different. I mean, they say the same thing, but it implies something differently. And the Epic translations were a lot better than heavy metal.
Kind of the beauty of translations. I only speak one language, but I think it would be amazing to speak multiple languages and see how people translate specific languages differently.
Well, I can tell you, Spanish and English, you can watch a movie that's been subtitled, and what I'm hearing, not in all cases, but in some cases, is not what they're translating.
Yeah, and
that's
you tell
what
me
I mean,
that.
Yeah.
And you say sometimes you get kind of misled, saying, wait a minute, that's not what they're saying.
That's not what they're saying. That's not what they're saying.
So to me, if I was watching with Al and it was subtitled, I would think, well, this is fine, but it would kind of disturb him because he knows that's not exactly what they're saying.
Now, what was the genesis of the few years, or I don't know how many years, that Mobius started working with Marvel? Was it Stan Lee just wanted to work with him?
It had nothing to do with Stan Lee. It was Archie Goodwin.
Archie.
It was an
Epic Illustrated or something?
It was Epic Comics.
Oh, yeah.
Archie Goodwin brought him over. It was in 86. I was in Los Angeles at the time. And Jim Shooter wrote in one of those Marvel bullpen, you know, in the books they always had the bullpen bulletins or whatever it's called.
Oh, yeah.
And he made the announcement that coming soon they're going to have the Mobius series.
Oh,
and that's all he said. And I was jumping up and down because I was still trying to get more Inkle stories. You know, they were always, you know, in heavy metal. And Ellie went up to three different series. And So I'm thinking, well, are they going to do the Inkwell? And then they started putting these out at the very end of 87. And then they put the Inkwell out. It was 9 graphic novels of Mobius, short stories, and Adina and all that.
And they're decent-sized graphic novels. What are they, like 128-page books, maybe?
Yeah,
or 100-page books?
Well, they're the European volume. And they printed the whole Inkwell series, which was greatness. And they started putting all this Blueberry stuff out. And anyway, this book here, The World of Adina, first I was a little bothered.
So, I have a question.
Sure.
Raise my hand. What company published this again?
Dark Horse.
Okay, Dark Horse is, are they, they're doing like hardcover Mobius books now.
Yeah, they're all hardcover.
Is this the first one that came out?
No. Yes, this is the first one. This is the only one I've done so far.
All right, proceed.
Now, Scott Connor, a friend of the show, I was listening, we were talking about it because I was a little upset that the dimensions they gave of the book seemed smaller than the European size. I was kind of disappointed. Scott was disappointed because you know what I feel about the ink or the humanoids is putting out. It's a little too small.
Yeah.
Well, I guess Scott talked to somebody through Dark Horse, and they said that the pages are European size. They just don't have the big white borders around.
Oh, yeah, yeah. There's just tiny border. I mean, there's a white border on these pages, but it's not that big.
Yeah,
so
they didn't waste a lot of space. I'm going to tell you, the colors are nice, the printing's nice.
The colors are sharp. It looks like pretty good quality paper. I mean, it's a thick hardcover book.
And they had one guy do all the lettering. He didn't match exactly, but he tried to follow Mobius' lettering style as much as he could.
Oh, yeah, okay. And, I can see it. Yeah, I can totally see it.
Once again, they translated it somewhat, trying to make it closer to French. I didn't have any problem with the Epic translation. I thought they were good. This one is coming out a little bit differently.
What do you prefer, the Epic translation or the Dark Horse translation?
They're both fine. If I just had the Epic translations, I'd be happy.
All right.
What makes this one nice is this one volume, and it has the 4 different Epic books that I told you about. And it finally, since 1987, I get to read how it finishes up.
Oh, nice.
So it has the last chapter after Stull. It's the very last chapter of the book. So
this has got the 4 collected books you had from Epic back in the day, plus it's got a brand new chapter you've never read.
Well, yeah, it's not brand new, but it's never been in English.
I mean, yeah, that's what I mean. Like, you've just never
read it. I thought, okay, great. And I'll tell you, I sat there and read the whole, you know, from the beginning all the way up, and it was like reading it for the first time again.
That's awesome, man.
And I finally read the finish, and This story is unique. It's not like any other series I've ever read, because he's putting some his beliefs in it, and he's bringing up about modern life compared to, you know, how you should be living, maybe. But he's not preaching. But it's an interesting way he brings it up, and sometimes how society controls you and how you let it and this and that. I have to admit, the ending...
Uh-oh. Give it to us straight, Don.
Well, I'm not going to give the ending away. It does end, but I wasn't satisfied. Which, not to say that's a bad thing, I guess. But I have to read it again, because I mean, wait a minute, that's kind of... It does resolve. And, like I said, it's a long time frame he's been doing these stories. So his drawing style changes a little bit. And he does part of... It's Mobius. He can do it on purpose. He likes to change styles a lot. But, even though they brought up what was going to happen, they didn't show everything. And I mean, well, okay. It makes you think. And for what you're getting, the price is right.
What is it, like $50 or something?
$49.99.
But I didn't pay that. I bought it online. And you know, it's always cheaper. I haven't seen this in a store. Now, on Facebook, sometimes comic stores publish a picture. They have the book in there, but... And that's nice, but, you know, I'd go in there, look at the book, and then go online to order. I wouldn't pay that kind of money for it.
I mean this in a serious way. Was Mobius, was he, I mean, I don't think he was during these books, but was he, like, taking some, you know, hallucinogenics or whatever? Because some of this stuff is really trippy. You know what I mean? Some of the imagery and stuff like that.
I feel like he might have been inspired by something he took. Yeah,
because that stuff looks like very dreamlike, very like.
He's always had quite that crazy imagination, though, hasn't he?
Yeah.
When he was a kid, his mother married a guy or lived with a guy, and he was in Mexico.
Yeah, that's right, Castaneda, the peyote or stuff or whatever.
But he reads Carlos Castaneda. Have you ever read those books?
No, I know about them. I remember seeing them in stores.
Those are incredible.
You read them?
Yeah, this girl I went to college with, she loved it. She had the first one and lent it to me, and I never read it. She got a little upset at me. And then when I was in the Navy, I met some guy I was working with, and he was talking about it, and it interested me quite a bit. So after I got in the Navy, somebody lent me the first book, and it was kind of incredible. And then years later, another woman I worked with lent me one of the other books, the last book. At the time, I guess last book. I don't be reading the others. But yeah, they're really neat. And the big joke is Carlos Castaneda was a student of Don Juan.
Yeah.
And some people say that they think that Carlos Castaneda was Don Juan. And, you know, there's never been any reported information of a Don Juan. And this one woman, another woman I'd met, was talking about those books. And she goes, you know, when you read those, it's almost like Carlos Castaneda sees the cusp of it, but he never can grasp the concept. Mm. Which, I don't know, maybe that's how he wrote it, but those books are incredible. One thing all the way through it, he's learning how to lose his ego. And I mean, there's wild stuff. Like one story, Don Juan, they went into a river, and he said there was a boy, his body was there, but he was gone, and the family was upset. So they took peyote, and they went to a river. And by this time, the river wasn't water. It was like a metaphysical thing. But they went in the river, and they found the spirit. There was somebody that died, but they didn't want to go alone, so they went and took the boy's spirit. So they took him by the hand. The boy's spirit went with him. Like any boy, he didn't know what's going on. So he was talking about he was a coward. And they went down the river. They got the boy, took him back to his family. Wild stuff. And there was another one where they took peyote, and then Don Juan showed up with two lizards. They tied the lizards to his head where they were facing. He says, you can go anywhere you want, but the lizards will make sure that you find your way back. Stuff. I loved it. But again, the whole thing was, even though there was peyote and stuff like that, Don Juan and another instructor would come over and start messing with him. And, you know, mind tricks and stuff, like anybody does when you're raising somebody. But he said, every once in a while, Don Juan would turn around and say, you know, you're thinking you're special, that we're picking on you, like you're somebody special. You're not. This is part of the teaching, you know. But basically, the whole thing, I started realizing, it's losing your ego. And anything, even though this doesn't happen in religion, that's what Jesus Christ is teaching you about. It's not all of you, it's all of God, you know. But it's in martial arts training, in any kind of real training, you're supposed to be a servant. You know, you're supposed to lose your ego and think of your fellow man, not let people walk over you. But it's not about you. And it's something I'm always telling Dallas all the time. Dallas, it's not about you. But no, it's... But I don't know, the Castaneda books I find incredible. But Mobius lived in the deserts of Mexico.
Oh, okay.
And when he was young, and they said that always stayed with him, but he found a spirituality to it. If he did drugs like everybody else did in the 70s, maybe, but...
Well, because he's connected with Jodorowsky.
Yeah.
And he did that weird allegorical movie, El Topo, that weird Christ-like Western, but it was so strange. And that kind of stuff always seems to be like Mobius, you know what I mean? Like allegories for real life, but in weird, you know, situations or whatever. So, yeah.
Which is when some of the best art is made, though. I think that's why Mobius is, that's why a lot of his stuff
it could be,
stands the test of time, though, is because a lot of it's allegorical.
Yeah.
It is. Mm-hmm. His drawings, I always think of lava lamps when I see his work.
Lava lamps.
Well, because you just see all kinds
big
of
shapes and colors.
How did it come about that? So when he hooked up with Marvel through Archie Goodwin at Epic, he ended up doing a Silver Surfer story with Stan Lee. How did that? Just Stan Lee just said, okay, since he's here, I want to do work.
No, Stan Lee really wasn't even with Marvel. He was just kind of
freelancing it or something.
Yeah,
from my understanding, though, it was Mobius that chose the character he wanted to do. Right?
He picked the Silver Surfer. Okay.
No, what happened was remember that little trade magazine, Marvel Age?
Yeah, I got some of those.
Yeah, I did too. It was a comic book that Marvel put out. It was, I think, a little bit cheaper than a regular comic, but it was basically an ad zine. You know, it was Marvel information. Mm. They usually get...
They had interviews and new art, new talent.
I know when Marvel Epic started doing Gru, Sergio Arguez did a cover. He did a few covers with Gru on it. But it's telling you about Marvel's going to be doing Gru. But it's basically just a comic book of ads. And they'd have little articles and stuff. Well, when they got the Mobius work, they printed some of Mobius' work in Marvel Age. And Mobius saw it. He never saw his work on newsprint. You know, the comic was on newsprint at the time. And he liked how it looked. And then Mobius said, you know, since he's in Los Angeles, he'd like to do an American comic book. So they were going to do a Marvel comic. And Arrow was talking about, you know, Stan Lee was the emeritus of the whole company. And they were saying, well, they should do something. And they were thinking, well, you know, he could do work with Stan Lee. So they agreed to it. And they had to choose a Marvel character. And I'm not really sure if Mobius chose a character or why, but I was disappointed at first because I thought, they're going to do Silver Surfer. I says, why don't they just do something to Mobius, you know, one of his comics? Mm. But when the book came out, it was Parable. It was two issues, and I shut up. It was greatness.
Well, I mean, Stan did create all the characters, right, in Marvel?
But they did break down how it worked.
They made us stir the pot.
Stan Lee basically, you know, had this idea, you know, and he kind of gave it to him, and then Mobius ran with it. Yeah, but it was really nice.
She's like, what?
Yeah. Yeah, the baby's been crawling over the house. Dallas has to keep jumping up and running, getting her. She's all over.
Like, and now she's making faces now to Al.
Background sound effects courtesy of Emily.
You're cracking me up now. Okay.
Well, hey, let's, on that note, let's go ahead and take a music break, and then we'll jump back.
All right.
Okay, let's sing. me.
Oh my god. My name's Mal. With me as always,
Dr. Morbius.
From Parts Unknown, and this is
Slow Robot A Go Go. We've been contracted by Two Dimension Comic Book Podcast to do this promo for you, and here it is, and I hope you enjoy it, and I hope you watch our show. Because we like B movies, B through Z grade movies.
Yes, B through Z grade movie review show.
That's right. So listen to us on bunchofdorks.com and listen to me on Two Dimension Comic Book Podcast, and then go to bunchofdorks.com and listen to Bunch of Dorks Podcast, which is defunct, but it's great.
So many directions.
And then go to Asian Cult Cinema.
No one's following all these
links. And then go to Indie Circuit on Radio St. Pete and go there too. And we run the world, so.
I think the wheels fell off the apple cart there. Yeah. Anyway, listen to go to
bunchofdorks.com
and listen to Slow Robot A Go Go if you like B through Z grade movies. You'll be glad you did.
You can hear our most recent 20 episodes on iTunes. If you would like to hear our older episodes, you can find them on our blog. Just go to bunchofdorks.com and click on the Cyclops.
And that was Pierre Legault. We played him before. He's great, and I wish he'd put out some more work.
Yeah, we used to play a lot of Pierre Legault like in the early days of the podcast, I remember. Yeah. He was on quite a few times.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, of all things, I worked with his mother. She was from Canada. She worked with us at the Widget Factory, and she'd always bring me books to read, and then she'd read some of mine. I always just loved her dearly. And I was at a party, and she was leaving, and my wife and I were walking out. She was in a car. She pulled up and talked to us. And there was a guy in the passenger seat listening to us quietly, and that was her son. And I said, he seemed like a really nice guy. She goes, oh, yeah, Pierre, everybody says that he's really nice. So I was Pierre Legault, but I never said a word to him. He just quietly listened. And it was a couple of years later, I guess he went back to Canada, and she brought around a CD. And she asked me, would you like to buy one? It was $15. That was, top dollar for CDs back then. Yeah, all right. I did because I just thought so much of her. And I listened to it thinking, okay, it was great. I listened to it all the time. So, we started doing the show. I thought about him and asked her. And she sent back to Pierre, says, permission granted. Awesome. But he plays piano for other people. He's always involved in music. But it's hard to find a link of any of his work. So, Pierre, you need to get on there.
Is his mom still working there?
No. She was gone by the time you guys came.
Don, I'm going to hand Emily off to you, and I'm going to talk about a book.
I don't know if she's going to like that.
I know. She might start crying. All right, gentlemen, I want to talk. Well, it's kind of fresh in my mind, a book that I just finished reading about a week ago. I think Fantagraphics Books published it. It's called Not Away. It's by Joshua W. Carter. He's done some other work that I've never read. This is the first thing I read of his. He's done a pretty popular one called Skyscrapers of the Midwest. At least that's what the internet say.
Yes. Yeah, the internet's always right.
So this book by Josh W. Carter is called Not Away. It's it's staggering. It's really good. It's basically, at its heart, it's a sci-fi book set kind of in the near future, I guess. But it's got kind of like an indie sensibility. I don't know how to explain it. The way he draws, the way he writes, and the things he focuses on, more about the people, the conversations people have with each other.
Right.
I like the cover.
It's beautiful, right? The art's beautiful, too. It's all black and white, beautifully inked. Everything's done by Josh Carter. And so, like I said, it's a science fiction book, but it focuses more on the people than the science fiction of it all.
Oh, okay. Uh-oh.
Is somebody going on my shoulder?
He's cracking up. She's like, yeah.
Look at this.
Yeah, look at that. That's
oh,
different.
Man, this is good radio.
That's cool, yeah. So let me.
Okay, yeah.
Let me see that book.
You got it
there. Okay. Yeah, don't drop her, Don.
Don't drop my daughter.
Okay. This is really nice.
It's set slightly in the future. Basically, there's some mining colonies, and colonies that are trying to find places for people on planet Earth to live. And the main basis, it follows a scientist named Melissa McCabe. Now, Melissa McCabe has been sent from Earth onto a space station to do some work. She's working on a couple things. She's working on helping a head scientist develop a wormhole to go to another planet or another area where possibly some of the inhabitants of Earth can go to. But her main main job there is focusing on the internet. So check it out. Not the internet, but in this world, there's something called the internet, I-N-N-E-R. Basically, It's like the internet, but it's all inside of your head, and you can access things in your brain and in your mind. And so it's like putting images and ideas, concepts, words inside of your head, and you can access it and experience it. Not everyone is able to do this. Not everyone is compatible with it. So anyway, there's a huge controversy about this internet because basically their router, the main hub, is a human girl. And they're using her and feeding all this stuff through her brain and shooting it out to other people.
It's like the Matrix, so anyway,
the main character, Melissa McCabe, is studying this little girl. Her name's Eva, I think it is. So anyway, because of this controversy back on Earth, there's like a guerrilla group or like a radical group that keeps on terrorizing and attacking the company that's in charge of the universe. So this is all kind of a backdrop, and it's really set up neat. But like I said, the main focus of it all is Melissa and her kind of getting used to living in a space station, getting used to her coworkers, focusing on her job, and basically all the crazy shenanigans that happen. So it's, like I said, it feels like a smaller book. It doesn't feel like a big epic science fiction book with big concepts, big ideas. Even though it's got that, it doesn't focus on those. You know, it focuses on Melody McCabe is her name. It focuses on Melody's like day-to-day actions. And then about two-thirds of the way through the story, a huge event occurs that's completely unexpected. Now, I don't want to ruin it for anybody, but it has to do with the wormhole that they're creating and something coming through that wormhole. Mm. Awesome. You totally don't expect it. It turns into kind of like a sci-fi slash horror book for a little bit.
Okay.
Everything changes from there. And everything proceeds on after that, and the story's great because it's kind of shrouded in mystery. You never know what's going to happen next, but you get so attached to the characters, you can, you know, you're curious as to what's going to happen to them and how they're going to react to all these situations they're thrown in. The ending, okay, let me tell you. First off, I got this book, I thought it was like a one shot, just a single graphic novel, you know, with a beginning, middle, and an end. The ending has this massive, shocking ending to it that I definitely don't want to ruin for anybody. And it's left on such a huge cliffhanger. I'm thinking, my God, man, I can't believe he just ended a book like that. Like, that's it? Is he going to write any more? Like, how could you end a book with more questions than it has answers? Turns out, Josh Cotter's planning on doing a 7-book series out of this.
Wow.
Which makes more sense. But nowhere does it say it's book one of so-and-so, or there's nothing that says to be continued. It's just the end, basically. And so I was shocked at the ending. But that being said, knowing there's more books, I can't wait to get the other 6. Like, I will diligently seek these out because I was floored, to use Don's word, I was staggered by the quality of this work.
Where'd you find out about it?
So I was just randomly searching. I don't know what website, but I was on the internet and I was looking up like the top best comics of 2016. And this one showed up. I'm like, oh, that's cool. So I just randomly threw it on my Amazon wish list, you know, just to remind myself maybe one day I'll get it. Well, for Christmas, Ellie bought a bunch of stuff off my Amazon wish list for me.
Uh-huh.
And this was one of the books. And I'm like, oh, my God.
Oh, she's a keeper.
Yeah. So I vigorously read it. And it's a pretty big book. I would say it's upwards of 300 pages. I read it over, I think, 3 sittings. Like, I read, like, close to 100 pages each time because I was so into it.
She's cracking me up.
Isn't that right?
You know, when you're talking about this, I'll look through this. I like the cover, as I said. It's a nice design. It's a nice drawing. I like everything about it. When I started thumbing through it, I'm loving how it starts out with the letter forms.
The first chapter is so surreal and just so abstract. Yes.
Yeah, it's surreal and abstract, but it also reminds me, and when I say this, it's a good way. It's like when you're in college and you're taking the design course, mm-hmm. and you have to start playing with limited, you know, items to make an interesting theme. Well, this guy is A++.
Yeah, this is a graphic designer's wet dream right here, man.
Yeah,
those first 20 pages are so beautiful.
Even if you're not a graphic designer and you're looking at this book, you'll enjoy it. It's very pleasing. I mean, it's successful, and it's telling a story. It's not just, you know, somebody's ego trip. But that's what caught me. The drawing style, it's not a drawing style that I veer to a lot. But, I mean, it's good for what it is, but I'm shocked at the amount of work that's put in here.
And speaking to the drawing style, when you think a science fiction book, you expect huge dynamic images, you know, lush, colorful pages, something like out of Mobius, but this is the exact opposite.
Yeah.
This is more akin to like an autobiographical book or something like that.
Yeah,
does that make sense?
Yeah. What it seems like, except it is a science fiction thing. He's got a lot in it. This woman that you're following through, she's not the one you're talking about. They're using for the internet.
No, she's not the one. Her name's Melody, but her main job is to study the little girl that they're using for the internet.
Oh, that's the girl she's talking to.
Yeah, little girl. Her name's Eva.
She puts that strainer on her head?
Yes.
Is her last name Destruction? Eva Destruction?
Eva Destruction.
Boom.
Boy, that's your comic strip now.
Yeah.
Some of these pages, these are greatness.
Yeah, those are pretty wild.
This reminds me of Rick Griffith a little
bit.
Yeah,
Rick Griffith, yeah.
Yeah, isn't that beautiful?
Like, very beautiful.
I highly recommend this. I'm trying to think of the kind of crowd, the audience that would enjoy this. Like, come on, help me out, guys. Like,
well, you've seen it. I'm going to buy it. I've never heard of this book, but when I'm looking through
there it. There you go. There's your crowd.
There you go. Don Moore is my crowd.
But there's a scope to this. I mean, like I said, even if I said the drawing style isn't something I normally veer to, it's good. But I like the drawings for what he's doing and the scope. And he's got designs for organizations. Everybody's walking around with T-shirts for that.
Yes.
I mean, it's lush. It's not.
The best way I can describe it, then, is it's a science fiction backdrop that focuses on the mundane and the small moments of people and their conversations, I guess.
And when I look through this, you know, sometimes you see some where you think, I wish they would have added some more incidental things, or I wish they would have done this, or I wish they would have added more background.
Yeah.
This one, everything that needed to be done has been done, and it's to progress the story. It all has a reason for being. But I've never heard of it.
Neither had I. And I've heard of his other work, that book, Skyscrapers of the Midwest. I've heard the name of the book in passing, but now I'm going to go back and get his other works, man, because Josh Cotter's a freaking baller.
You know, Josh Cotter, I knew nothing about you, but...
It's Cotter, C-O-T-T-E-R.
Oh, yeah,
for
right.
Anybody
Mr.
listening.
Cotter from the... You know,
yeah, welcome back, Cotter, this is a C instead of a K. Well, you got me hooked too, because now I'm going to have to find
nice.
This.
You want to look through it?
A lot of hooking going on. Yeah, I saw it. But
a lot of hooking going on, especially in my street corner.
It does remind me a little bit of Underground Comics.
Yeah, it has the real.
Yes.
And I want to say, I hate to compare artists, because every time I say that, people say, well, actually, that doesn't make me think of them, but it makes me think of Chester Brown a little bit.
Yeah,
it's funny, and this is a horrible comparison, but it reminds me of some of the scratchy black and white line work of R. Crumb.
Yep, actually, I see R. Crumb
right?
in there too.
Right?
Not as, maybe not as like...
neurotic.
Well, R. Crumb's a little bit more deft, maybe, he's more of a deft artist than this guy, but this guy is doing exactly what he needs to do. It doesn't have to be any...
Yeah, exactly. And he's certainly his own man. He's got his own style. It seems like he's telling a story that other people don't. He's unique.
Yeah, it's like when I see this guy's work, I couldn't see anybody else doing it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know if mean? Another artist personal. Doing it would have completely changed
the
dynamic, the feeling.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing with a lot of these indie comics, where the guy does it all. It's almost like a singer-songwriter, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can write songs for the people to sing, but a lot of times when it's something just personal or whatever, you kind of do it yourself, and then it becomes like something, you know, more than it would have been if somebody more, whatever, deaf.
I see what you mean,
yeah.
Although, on the same token, if these singer-songwriters, they write something and give it to a professional artist, a professional singer, they... completely
take it to another direction.
Yeah, they take it in a different direction. They make it their own, and it becomes a completely different song than what the writer had intended, which can sometimes be an amazing thing.
Well, it's like somebody like in the 60s, like Carole King, who wrote for everybody else, a bunch of popular, and then when she did her solo album, you know, it was like, oh my god, this is incredible, you know, you really interpreted your songs the way, you know.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, you know, I mean, that's part of it, but yeah, it's a really nice book. So
it is a nice book.
That's my piece. It's fun. Don can talk like for what was it, a half hour about Mobius. I think I like flew through this in 10 minutes.
Right,
so I could say so much more about it, but
you sold the book.
Yeah.
I'm definitely going to buy this. I'm adding it to my wish list.
I just recommend anyone that's interested go just look up some Google images of Not Away by Joshua W. Cotter and you know, see if it's your thing, your style.
Yeah, I want to get this, and I'm actually interested in some of his other work. I can't imagine him having more work. This is so lush.
Did he do any other work before this?
Yeah, like there's a book called Skyscrapers of the Midwest.
So he just did graphic novels. He didn't do any.
As far as I know, I don't know much about him at all. I really don't. This is my first exposure to him.
Yeah, I was going to say, it looked like this was just done for, do you know, was it just a graphic novel or was this done as a comic?
Pretty sure it's just a graphic novel. I was looking at his, was it his Twitter page or Tumblr or something? And I saw that he's working on Volume 2 now. The story's all written and he's working on the pages.
That's one thing I think. Fantagraphics, I don't think they're really doing too many single issues anymore.
They don't. It's mostly collected editions and graphic novels, right?
Yeah, which they...
Really? Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, well...
That's not the crowd. They're not going for, like, the new standard, the comic book standard. They're going for a different, you know...
Yeah, well, I think they always kind of want to do that, but the market
wasn't
supported.
Well, except for Love and Rockets. Now they're back
Love and Rockets, they have a series of trades, but now they're... Yeah, I know they're doing the monthly, or not monthly. I think it's four times a year.
Yeah,
but
my first exposure to Fantagraphics was when I was a kid. It was the Bradley, not the Bradleys, Hate with Buddy Bradley.
I still
Bradley.
Have some of those. I found some of those around with that.
I love those books. Hate,
Peter Bag.
That was my first exposure, and then my second exposure was Usagi Yojimbo. completely different style, you know, completely different type of comic, and I was floored when I was a kid. I'm like, wow, the same comic company publishes Hate. And they published Usagi Yojimbo. Like, that's great.
Yeah, the first one I saw was Love and Rockets, I'm pretty sure.
I didn't see that till later.
They were doing books, when I started reading, they were doing Amazing Heroes, you know, the criticism.
Isn't that a fanzine?
No, Comics Journal was a criticism book. Heroes was...
Well, it was still, you know, they interviewed, they talked about it.
Yeah, kind of, sort of.
But they had, what was it? They were doing that Gil Kane work.
Hey, Comics Journal, that's journalism, man. That's journalism.
Yeah, it was
criticism, whatever you think.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
It was it was a magazine I really enjoyed, but it's what Al, I think, one time said about Robert Crumb. They went beyond the pale at times. They went, it was kind of a mean-spirited, it didn't
Gary
need to be
Gruff
slanted that
was
way.
Was a jerky guy sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
I think he just liked to not start fights, but he liked to push buttons. It's just that
buttons.
Kind of personality.
You know, you're talking about publishing a graphic novel. There's a company called First Second. I bought one years ago. It was on a podcast called Fanboy Radio. They had a guy that did a book called American Born Chinese.
Oh, that's First Second Publishing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I bought that. I showed it to you. And then Al talked about the same creator for First Second did two books called Boxers and Saints. And it was about China. When Christianity went through and there was the Boxer Rebellion, and one was from the Boxer side and the other was from the Saint side, which we talked about that. Well, my daughter, I can't remember the name of the book. It was Plays with Boys or something like that. I went up to see her and she handed me that. I think it was First Second as well. But it was about a young girl, little girl, that played with her brothers, you know, and some of their friends. There was no other girls there. And they ended up going to the house, and there's a... That's fine, Dallas. That's fine. Let her be. The daughter's over in another part of the house shaking a rattle, and Dallas is trying to keep her quiet.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't mean to keep interrupting everybody.
But, no, that's fine.
That's okay.
But basically, the whole story is they end up going to this abandoned house or a house somewhere, and there's a ghost of a little girl there that the girl could see. It was a great story. My daughter picked it up. Anyway, another time I went to see her, I found this in a used store, Undertaking the Lily Chin by First Second.
Now, this is a beautiful cover, too. Don let me borrow this book, and I just didn't get around to reading it. I felt horrible, and
let me explain. I kind of forced it on Dallas, because he told me I don't have time, which I understand.
He, air quotes, left the book at my house last time he was
over. And then I kept emailing him, saying, have you read it yet? Have you read it yet? And I think one time I could see the teardrops on the email page. I can't, Don. I just can't. You know, so... But no, the book wasn't what I thought. I picked it up because... I don't think the creator is Chinese. I think she's from Eastern Europe. But it has it looks Chinese. But it's The Undertaking of Lily Chin, and it starts out with this there's two brothers. One's in the military, and he's standing to watch. And the other brother is trying to get him to steal a plane and fly around for fun, which I was in the Chinese army, but I was in the American military, and I'm telling you, that's a foolish thing to even think. Well, the civilian brother who's causing the trouble ends up getting killed. And the other brother escapes. Well, then the family's upset because, and not being Chinese, I didn't quite understand the culture, but I read about this, that if you die alone, it's bad. So So what they got to do is find a bride for him. So they give the son so much money and have him go find a bride for the son. Basically, they have to find a woman to kill and bury next to the son so he has a bride. And so he has to go to this other city, and he finds a guy that specializes in doing this. They have to find a body.
There's a guy that specializes in that?
And they find this guy, and it's kind of like Big Trouble in Little China when they find that guy that's doing the tour guide stuff and was helping him out, kind of a grizzled old guy. But what they do, he has a shovel, and they're supposed to dig up a body and take it back to bury it with his. Well, it doesn't work out the way he planned, and they got to figure something out. Well, they end up finding this woman, Lily Chin. Now, this book, when the way the artist draws it, everybody's kind of grotesque, you know, the way they do it, in a stylized way. It's neat. But, you know, the people aren't attractive. I mean, in a way, they're neat characters, but they're not attractive. When they get to Lily Chin, she draws grotesque as well, but she's cute. You can't help but like her. She's the only child. You know, the father is very protective of her. They live out in the middle of nowhere in farmland, and she does have suitors come over wanting her. She's not interested. And the father's pretty overbearing. Anyway, the brother, searching for the bride, ends up there. And Lily Chin escapes with him. She runs off with him. He's separated from the guy he hires to find the bride. Well, she follows him and comes on. As the whole story is starting to unfold, they're planning on using her as the brother's bride. They're going to kill her.
Oh my God.
I know. I'm thinking. I'm horrified. And she is a firecracker. You know, she's a young lady, but she's strong.
So she has no idea of their intentions.
No. And like I said, the brother is struggling with this. You know, he doesn't feel... He's, you know... Anyway, it's pretty lush. I like I said, I picked it up because the drawing style interested me. And I found this in a used bookstore. I thought, all right, I read it. I liked it. This isn't something I would seek out and actually want to get. Now that I have it, I'm happy. I highly recommend it. Second, I see the books that... They put them out not as comic books. They are comic books, but they put them out as graphic novels. Like I said, I have the Boxers and Saints books. I have American Born Chinese. I have this. I also bought another one, which I asked Dallas about, Prince of Persia.
He accidentally left that at my house, too.
Yeah, well, the reason why was I asked Dallas if he ever... It's based off the video game. I guess the guy that created the computer game...
I think it was... Jordan Mechner?
Is that him?
I think so.
Well, he put it out as the first, second graphic novel. They got some other people to draw it. It's four names in the credits. I found that in Oklahoma at a used bookstore. A drawing style I like Arabian Nights kind of stuff. That one is basically about water. I never played the game. That's why I was asking you about it and wanted you to look through it. But it starts out with this girl that's living kind of in a... I took it as a palace. And she's taking dance instructions from this guy and doing this and that. Finally, the guy says, well, this is our last lesson. I'm gone. But they're fine. But then they start showing the outside. They got a water minister that's keeping the people in a drought. And it seems to me like there's plenty of water for everybody, but the government's not allowing the water to be out. Then all of a sudden it switches this guy out in this desolate kingdom by himself. And this girl escapes the palace. You know, she cuts her hair, puts on poor people's clothes, and walks out. And they just treat her as another beggar. She ends up leaving the city out in the desert. She finds this guy in this old abandoned palace. I liked it, but sometimes I got a little confused by some of it. To me, the story doesn't really hold up so well. I like the drawing style. I like the idea of it, but...
Yeah, I like the drawing style, and that's some better than... Yeah. The other one.
It was an old computer game. I played it when I was a kid. Now they've done more modern versions, but the original one, as far as I remember, it was just a princess or a woman was kidnapped by a sultan, and you were playing the Prince of Persia, I guess, and you had to escape a jail and traverse through this big building and rescue the princess. That's all I remember.
Well, my daughter was very small. Basic. She was playing on a friend's computer. And I guess their sons had it. It was an ancient, you know, low resolution computer game. But I remember she was always jumping on rooftops all the time. But I don't know, this one, and the character that's living out in the they keep going to these flashbacks about the Sultan died, and he had, there was three kids, two boys and a girl. I think they were somehow cousins in a royal family. I don't know if the two guys were brothers or they were all cousins, but one of them was supposed to marry the girl. Well, the one that the girl was in love with didn't marry her, and he, the way I took it, I'm getting it confused now, and I was confused when I read it. I kept thinking that was him. And the other one became the Sultan, and he died. And I think something happened to her as well. But again, it wasn't, the story could have been better. I like the idea of it, but it could have been executed better. The artwork I do like, is the reason I bought it. But again, I'm not satisfied with how the story was put together.
Gotcha.
But anyway.
You liked half part of it, not all of it, so...
Well, guys.
Well, yeah. Anything else? I almost read a comic book this week.
I know. I feel like Al hasn't really said anything this
episode. No, I haven't. But, you know, but I wasn't. I didn't really. Like I said, I was trying to read Doom. This thing called, I found called Doom Force, which is like a send up of from 92, so it's a send up of Image. But I hadn't finished reading it yet, so I can just say the first 10 pages are pretty funny.
Who published it?
DC. And it's drawn in a Rob Liefeld.
So it's like a parody
style.
Of.
Big time. Image. Yeah, but like a. Rob Liefeld, kind of like, it's definitely like over, even, as much as he exaggerates, it's even more exaggerated than that, but it's, when I'm done with it, I'll bring it and you can guys look at it, but I forgot about it, I found it in the box, and I'm going like, what's this? And I'm looking at it, and I see Grant Morrison, I'm going like, oh, probably Dallas would want this, and I'm looking at it, and I go, oh, this is like a goof on Image, and I'm like, and from 92 when they were at their peak, so I was like, oh, I should read this.
Isn't it amazing the company Image has become? They've always been a proponent of self-publishing and publishers' rights, and they still are, but they've just branched out into so many amazing different genres and styles. And
yeah, they're how can I explain it?
You can't really box them in, really.
No, they promote it and they sell it for you.
That's right,
whatever,
they're amazing.
You know what I mean?
I was looking on their submissions page. I'd never be able to get Mighty Blue on Image, but it was neat looking at the submissions page and just reading, like, you know, you retain all the rights, this and that, and they're very open to those kind of things.
That's an interesting topic that I can talk about. I was looking through some of these companies' submission pages, and it's getting really weird, you know what I mean? It's like, you go, okay, I just wanted to send some art, and it was like, well, you can't send us anything because, you know, for legal reasons, and it has to be, you know, if you're going to send us a story, you have to send us, like, you know, a waiver, and we don't want it online. You have to mail it to us, which is okay, fine, you know, but it's easier to do it online. They have, like, pages of, like, you know, legal jargon. It's just, I just want to submit some storytelling to you.
Check
you know,
the Image Comics website, because from what I was
reading,
they
want an entire
it's very
book.
More open.
They do take pens and niggas, but pretty much they're really interested in the finished work, and then you can decide thumbs up or thumbs down. But in reality, you might be able to do it yourself as a graphic novel and get it, you know, and get it done yourself.
That's my intention.
Why would you want to go through a middleman? You know, get all the glory for yourself. But they might be able to promote it.
Well, that's the thing, though. Like a company like Image is good for distribution and promotion.
They'll
market it for you. They'll distribute it for you. You do all the work.
Because I know that
you'd retain
the
rights.
I know that the monopoly that is Diamond Comics, they could refuse you if you're like, if you're DB, Comics or whatever.
They can say nope, and they're one of the only games in town. So
they're the only game in town. There you go. Because that magazine that I get, The Creeps, which is like an eerie and creepy knockoff, you know, but it's a tribute. It's pretty good. They were only in newsstands, and I just found out that and I asked my buddy, he goes, what's going on? He goes, well, he hasn't been able to get it on Diamond. Finally, after 8 issues, it's going to be, sold at Barnes & Noble, and it's going to be in Diamond. So it took them a while before they accepted it. So, yeah, you know, that's the other part of the story.
Speaking on submissions and, you know, artwork and publishing and stuff. In case anybody out there doesn't know, Al's a dynamite artist. I don't know if you've seen his work, but we've got, you know, a link to your blog or your webpage.
It's
on the sidebar of our website at bunchofdorks.com. Check out some of Al's stuff, man. He's awesome. Yeah.
And you need to add some more stuff to it.
Yeah, I've been working on some stuff. You know, I'm also like really like not slow, but it's funny because when I draw,
that's a whole matter altogether.
Because when I draw, it's like I look at it and I'm going like, oh, okay. And I put it away for a while and then come back to it to be completely fresh eyes looking at it. Because I just find that when I see something and I do it, I like it. And then it's like I could come back to it and not like it again. So it's a whole different
technical
thing or whatever. You know, looking at a page in front of you drawing and then looking at it on the screen is like different, you know. So, but yeah. I mean, submitting books, submitting artwork these days, it's a completely different story. But if you had a finished book, I would send it to them and you know sign all the paperwork, sign all the documents that say you're not infringing on my copyrights, blah 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 and all that stuff.
Yeah, that's one thing about Image. I still always think of them when they first started, and that they had a style. You know, even though it's several guys, it was definitely an Image style.
That house style just comes from all the guys that started it broke away from Marvel,
exactly. Like X-Men, maybe DC, artists, basically, and Spider-Man.
Well, they had that cyber X-Men kind of look, but it's a diverse. They're the most diverse publishers, you know, and there's basically any kind of book you can think of is being printed by them.
Yes, and that's what I love about them.
I like the fact that the creators retain the rights to it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I like it, and like I said, there's a big, huge... My daughter reads some of the Image books. You know, I pick them up. I never think of them as Image books, but... Yeah, they certainly... Well, as I say, I don't know if take chance is the word, because, you know, the artist still has to pay, you know, for the printing and stuff. So, I mean, you can still die on the vine when you're putting it out, but...
Yeah, there's a little of everything. I just finished reading a graphic novel from Image, volume one of a book by Jason Aaron called... Southern Bastards.
Yeah.
And it's, once again, that big old Humble Bundle that I talk about every year after year. I still have books that I haven't read. But, and this is just about an old guy going back to his hometown. It's like a football town, you know, small southern town run by the local high school football. And it's just something that you might not see out of other publishers. And it's so cool to see the variety of stuff that Image
publishes.
Plus,
I think if you have some work, it's probably better to go to conventions and, kind
get
of
it out
like
there.
Press, meet and network, more so than to send stuff off, you know what I mean? It's like, I'm sure a lot of these guys, you know people and have stuff done and, you know, blah, 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 and they get their work out, and eventually they'll get to Image or some other company like that. But there's a million companies out there now, too, you know, every bit. You know, there's many ways to, you know, get it done or whatever. But to me, it's like, if you had a name, do a graphic novel. If you can send it to getting in bookstores, you know, that's where you make, you know, the money and less editorial, you know, changing of your work. So.
All right.
Yep, that's it.
I think that's it, guys.
All right.
I want to thank everyone for listening to us this episode. We had a great time discussing, you know, our favorite hobbies as usual. And thanks, guys, for coming over to my place to do it.
I have other hobbies. I'm not going to discuss.
All right. Well, we'll have another episode out in about a week, you know, as usual. Don's usually good about that.
If you get a chance, if you listen to us through iTunes or Stitcher, please leave us a rating or especially a review if you could. And you can subscribe to us. It helps us out. And if you like the show, please let somebody else know.
Yeah, word of mouth is the best thing. Any exposure is good for us, and we really appreciate the support all you guys give us, especially on Facebook. All right, guys. Well, thanks for listening. We'll see you in about a week or so. So until then, take care of yourselves and
read more comics.
You can find Al's other podcast, Slow Robot A Go-Go, Dallas's webcomic, The Mighty Blue, and Al's blog, Destination Nightmare, on the sidebar of our blog at bunchofdorks.com.
And click on the Cyclops.